Welcome to the Huntsville Macintosh Users Group February 2007 formal meeting.
Treasurer, at the end of the year of 2006, we had $3,686.83. I've collected some dues, but not everyone's dues yet. And we have written a check for $24.72 for our domain name for the next 3 years. This was a wonderful deal that Marius got for us. So we're set for 3 years, which is better than like $35 for 1 year. So sounds like a real bargain. And we have a balance as of the 31st of January of $4,012.11. So we're doing okay. I don't know.
Well, whenever the server dies, we'll have to get a new server.
We'll have it. You always need to have a little bit of money on hand for emergencies. So, does the secretaries have any words of wisdom?
It was snowing in Texas.
Oh, really? Great. Great. I know it would cool down a little bit, but... old business, we have the nominating committee, who is supposed to give us a report, nominating committee.
And you think I may not have one?
No, I think you would have one.
Oh, I do.
Yes, I have confidence.
Okay, this nominating committee submits the following slate of officers for the Huntsville Macintosh Users Group, the period April 2007 to April 2008.
The past SU runs for president.
Down here. I'm getting ready to read it. President Petcott.
Oh, no.
David McFerrin. Vice President Adam Bryant. Secretary Pat Carson. Assistant Secretary Betty Brumfield. Treasurer Linda Tinker. Respectfully submitted Ted Brumfield, Bob Dorman, and Tom Minetta.
Very good.
Okay. We've got our slate of officers. Do we have to approve them?
No.
Actually,
the actions are in March.
The next business meeting, which will be the 10th of March, we'll vote on those. And if anyone wants to nominate themselves, they're welcome to do that. I don't think you've got ones that foolish. Let's see. Keith is not here, so we cannot hear anything about the electrical outlets from the library. So we'll let that go until next month. And do we have any new business?
We do. Can you pull up the calendar for May? Mm-hmm. I believe it's May 12th. Is the first meeting of the month.
It would be the 12th, yes.
How'd you all like to do a cookout that day?
Sounds great. Mm-hmm. May?
Yeah, May 12th. Figured we'd actually get plans 2 months ahead of time instead of 2 weeks. Is there a motion for that?
I so moved.
I second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? All right. I've got a flyer already made up.
Well, somebody was confident about this. Well,
is it going to be at the park again?
It will be.
No, not right this time. I said, let's make it to
26. What?
I said, if I'd known you had a flyer, I would have said, let's make it to 26.
That's why I didn't say it. I'm going to try to get some people to post that flyer out at UH and NASA. And maybe Best Buy, CompUSA, Turk City, those kind of places, and see what kind of response we get. I got it. Okay, I've got the PDF with me. I don't know of any really other new business. Is anyone else?
Good question. What's the airport password?
What?
Password for the airport?
Oh, it is new. It hasn't been set up yet.
Can
do you mind setting that up a little bit?
Oh, geez.
Hey, this is going to be part of the home.
Yeah, I was going to say that might be the thing to do. Okay, so airport admin utility. Let's see what we find.
Marius, did you mention anything about the
voice? We haven't talked about any other business except the nominating committee as you were walking in.
Cool. Is it next business meeting? We'll do that.
Next business meeting, we will have the vote. Yes, but we already have a slate of officers.
No. I mean, a couple of questions.
Yeah, we're not ready for that yet.
I am so not prepared.
I'm afraid to set it up. I think I need to be physically connected to it. Because I'm not seeing it on the network. Let me see. Maybe. That's why. I have to choose the right network. Clue number one, be on the right airport network. There we go. Let's see here. If
By the way, thank you, Mr. Gorman, for the lovely use of your app here.
I just hope I don't need it.
Did your bot send by Apple Care with this?
We've got several computers here.
For those of you who do not know, our Airport Express went on Fritz the last business meeting, and Mac Resource took very good care of us. Apple was just slow to respond, getting us a new unit.
Well, you're not set up yet to go to the outside world. There we are. Well, since somebody mentioned it, I might as well bring it up. I'm in the process of doing a little redesign of our webpage. It's gotten a little stale and old, so this is not the real thing yet. This is still a work in progress. I just want to give people a heads up, and if you want to look at it and give me criticism or ideas of what you want to see, I'm all for that. So this is what we've got so far. Not all the links work, but this is database driven, unlike the old site. And as I said, still very much a work in progress. It's not public yet. Won't be until we're satisfied with the changes.
I'm going to skip back to the cookout real quick. Hopefully for the April 28th meeting, the second meeting of the month, we'll have an iLife iMovie prototype demo. And for those of you who are interested, after the cookout, we'll go on a nature walk with digital cameras, and you can take what you learned from the meeting before and make like a quick 2-minute movie presentation slideshow with music and show that at the next meeting. I figured that would be a good way to exercise what we learned here. So, okay. I've got no other new business. Adam? We're nominated again, I guess.
Okay. Just giving people a little warning. I've made some small changes here, and I'm going to update them, so it'll take you offline here for a few seconds.
I guess we move on.
When was the cookout?
May 12th.
12th. I was one. Yes. I was one. That's why we have these things. I stopped by this week and talked to Larry, and he asked for us to reformat our flyer to basically one-third of a page. something that is about 3.5 inches by 8.5 inches. Something easier for him to hand out instead of a trifold or a full page. He said that would really help to make sure that those can be sit out on his, that those can sit out on his displays. And so we're in the process of working that out. If we have good enough response from that, he apparently has pool with vendors and software developers to get them to come in and start doing presentations and helping us out. So I'd like to, assuming I'm still going to be on for the next year, I'd like to find a way to increase membership by 25%. And that's going to be a need. And I'm going to need help. So basically, everyone in the room, raise their hands. You are the membership committee. If you find someone and you just hear the keyword Mac, if they're talking bad about it, if they're talking good about it, invite them out. Get them in here. One more letter is always good, because then once one person sees what we're about, hopefully they'll tell someone else and just get the word out. And hopefully by getting this flyer out to NASA and UAH and those folks, that'll help give us a little bit more base and coverage and letting more people know and be aware that we exist. There are a lot of people that I run into out there that have no clue that we exist and they've used a Mac for 8 years. They're just always, there's a Mac user group in town? Yeah. Well, I wish I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it, that was a lot of them for a reason. I'll share it for a minute.
Are you going to take care of redoing that flyer?
It is already redone.
It's on?
Oh, yeah. That one. There are one for Larry. Yeah. Yes.
I'm kind of confused as to why he uses much smaller. But it was one page.
Apparently, when it was smaller, he couldn't put it in the little trifold holder and make it noticeable. And they would always
He's trying to include it in some document he's got.
That's what I'm assuming.
No, he's wanting to put it out on the displays with the Mac. And he didn't want to just put out an 8.5 by 11 standard piece of paper out there. He'd like to put it in a card stand and make it vertical so people can see it and they don't have to remember every time, hey, this person bought a Mac, give them the flyer.
So in other words, instead of a trifold brochure, just a single little sheet that goes into the...
Yeah, but their uprights are trifolds, aren't they?
Yeah, good trifolds.
You can fit them in there.
Yeah. Trifolds go in those type of holders.
Yeah. But if he specifically asked for single, and I think that's probably a good idea, we can pack information into that they need to get to the meeting and find more information about us. It doesn't really necessarily have to be a membership form. It just has to make them aware that we exist. And the membership form is online, or we have a care community. Mm-hmm. So it's just basically a large business card, the way I see it.
So his whole purpose is to help advertise.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's what he wants.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It sure looks like the size of the book is the size of the triangle.
Yeah. Yeah. Just one side of that trifold is what he's looking for. So we can print off one sheet and actually have 3 flyers.
Mm-hmm. Then we'll sit around with some media and cut them off.
Exactly.
No, I have a paper cutter.
See? I've got a how do you get them off?
I've got Pat as the chairman of the membership committee. did you print off your name?
It's on.
Cool. Thanks. We're going to try to send Marius the flyer so you all can take a look at it real quick. It's ready. Oh, this lovely thing. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Nothing in the Dropbox yet.
To H-book.
Yeah. There.
While I'm trying to get that over to Marius, does anyone have any questions about the cookout?
I got anything.
Okay. We are on May 12th. We're going to have a cookout up on Montana.
And is there going to be
non-members? There's going to be a flyer and email and stuff on our website about it.
We bring food?
Bring a covered dish. The meats will be provided by the group. We're not doing hot dogs this year. I had a pack of hot dogs left over from last year. And I bought a pack of hot dogs so they didn't go over well. Everyone will get bratwurst or hamburger. So it's just one less thing.
How do you join the list? I just heard about this in the paper.
Oh, cool.
Hey, dudes, and join the group. She's my new member.
Working real hard.
Can we get started?
Yeah. Hey, there you go.
We'll have a leaderboard up here and see how many.
Sure, why don't we have it? Cruders list.
Okay, back to Billy's computer.
Yeah, it should be Atlas. I'm looking for him.
There we go. I'm talking to myself. Don't worry about me.
So where were we in terms of flashes? I thought we were started with those, right?
We start with.
Well.
Okay. Flashes.
There we go. Think?
Yeah. It's a 14.8.
Ooh. Typical graphics person. Goes overboard on these things.
I got a 100-gig card. I think I had a really good song
out. Well, it says 14.8, so maybe it is here.
And Billy, you will have it here in a second as well.
There we go.
I cannot remember who took those pictures, but whoever you are, thank you, Mom.
And we have it.
Yeah, I'm a graphics person.
Well, we can definitely zoom back in.
We'll email Ted or personal copy.
Well, it'll be up online here probably before the end of the day. This is where the details are. Here's this fine print.
Make sure I still have Montana right. I didn't do that last year, I'm sorry. Anyway, we started flashes. Anyone have any questions from your phones?
I have an iPod that I don't use all the time like you guys do. And it had been turned off, you know, with a little orange showing, mm-hmm. And it was dead as a doornail. And it took me probably 20 hours or so to recharge it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that bad? Or I've got it under, it's still under warranty.
The question is, how long did it take for you to discharge it once it's charged? I mean, it's not unusual for an iPod to take a long time to charge if its batteries really run down.
Well, it was pretty dead.
Yeah. You said it's still under warranty?
Uh-huh.
So you bought extended warranty on it?
No.
This is interesting.
You bought it this past year?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't buy it, I bought it.
Oh, even better. Yeah, that then you really, the bad odds of the battery being bad are rather small. So my guess is once you've fully recharged it, it should work just fine. I mean, my old iPod, I sort of did the same thing. I only used it when I traveled.
Yeah.
So it just would go unused for a month or two at a time, and then when you recharge it, it takes a while.
Okay.
Nothing unusual.
Thank you.
Yeah, two quick ones. On the on the old OS 9, the classic, you could go under Finder and find about this computer depending on the version of your software. Where do you do that under 10?
About this Mac, right here. First thing under the Apple menu.
Under the app, okay. Gotcha.
And that gives you the rough stuff. If you want more information, you click on more info. And that brings up the system profiler, and there's more info there than you ever want to know. It tells me I need to get a new laptop, I guess. Don't plan on replacing this one anytime soon, however.
Okay, the second part of that I'm getting a lot of emails with attachments with pictures. And it says software not found on this computer to open. What the heck do I need to download or buy?
Well, maybe you don't want to.
Some people I know.
Okay, then the next question is, does it tell you what kind of attachment it is?
No. Oh, on the attachment?
Yeah, it should tell you what kind of file format it is.
Okay.
But sometimes it doesn't do that, and if you know what it is, if you know it's a PDF, then just add .pdf or .dot, and then that'll
explain. Yeah, let me see here if I can't. I mean, there's a second way, usually, that allows you to deal with this. Let me see here if I have a something harmless with a picture in it. First, this machine hasn't been online for a few days, so it will want to resync everything. Let's see here.
What is that?
Is there a dot anything behind the file name?
No.
Okay. Are they other Mac users?
No, the PC.
Maybe Windows meta file or something like that? Oh, that's good to know. Now I know that I wasn't supposed to be at work after 3 yesterday. Let's see here.
It doesn't give a choice. It says
okay.
You can't find whatever.
Yeah. So here. Okay, the next question is, what email client are we using? Are you using Apple Mail or are you using...
Well, I'm using Comcast.
Well, Comcast is... are you using the web browser or are they using Outlook Express or...
Well, it's coming in on Comcast email.
Right. But I mean, what is your email client? What program are you using?
Comcast has one you can't use.
Oh, really? Oh, my God. Because the thing that comes to mind if you're using Apple Mail is you go under View, Message, Raw Source, and as you're going through there, of course, sometimes you have a mess like this where everything is formatted HTML, but it will tell you if it's a... let me find something that's MIME encoded, because that's usually... My guess is that's what's going on here, is that you have some MIME-encoded stuff in there. Let's see here. There must be something in here that I can show. Well, let's see here. Maybe I have... Nope, that's not it. These attachments are somewhat annoying, aren't they? Well, I probably have more than I care to have here in the junk file. That's probably a good place to go get a piece of spam, or should I say phishing? Okay, this is a phishing. Well, see, the problem is phishing is usually written in HTML, which is not what we're looking for. But notice we've got some things here that have attachments. So that's the sort of thing that we're looking for. Ah, yes, a great case of spam. Okay, so if you look at this, let me just double click on it. Yep. And so what I want to do here now is go and review message raw source. And as you're going, right here, see this?
Yeah.
That tells you what the actual name of the item is. And in this case, it's a GIF file, but it could be anything. It's just a MIME attachment. And even though you don't necessarily see it in your mail reader, if you have a way of looking at the raw source, most of them allow you to do that, then you can figure out what it is. My guess is, just sort of wag, is that it's probably Windows Metafile. Okay, that's not something the Mac opens natively.
Even if you've got Mac Office on there, it doesn't.
Well, in Office it would, yes.
That's why I'm frustrated.
But you know, the other possibility is that they just use some sort of proprietary compression method, which means that unless you have a tool to extract that from whatever archive it's in, you're not going to be able to look at it. And sometimes Outlook does some weird things on Windows as far as sending attachments.
Is that a DAT file?
Well, he doesn't know what it is. That's why. But my first suggestion on that, though, is if you're using a program that's supplied by your ISP, don't. Okay. There are much better email clients than that. I mean, you can use Apple's, you can use Microsoft's, Entourage, very good program. You can use Eudora, very good program. So
Apple, you got to pay for it. Right?
What do you mean?
No.
It's free. This one, I paid $129 for it. Well, academic price, a little less, but it's called OS X. Okay, it comes with the operating system. You don't have to pay for it separately.
It's
.Mac. .Mac you pay for, but that's basically sort of an online service, which is a totally different game. But the mail software is free. And you can get Eudora for free. There are other programs, MailSmith from the people that make BBEdit, which costs a little bit of money. It has a learning curve back there. Very much correct. Mozilla, the makers of Firefox, they make a mail program called Thunderbird. SeaMonkey, which is sort of the replacement of the old Mozilla, also has an email component into it. So there are many options that are free that aren't, you know, flaky in the sense of being supplied by a ISP, because I don't really trust what these people do, really.
I have a similar situation. I'm on DSL out of Ardmore.
Uh-huh.
And they use something called Squirrel Mail. And
well, Squirrel Mail is something else.
Don't come through on that.
Yeah.
But as soon as you download it to mail, everything's right there.
Well, Squirrel Mail is just a form of webmail. And matter of fact, that's the webmail that comes with OS X server. So if you run an OS X server machine, that's your mail machine. If you want to use webmail, that's what you get. But I'm not a great believer in webmail, except when I'm traveling and don't have access to my own computer. Yes, ma'am?
It's good for screening trash out.
I have a question. I just got a couple of external ones. They're all FireWire, so I've got three. So I was wondering how to connect them all. Like, I've got one FireWire going to the front, the other FireWire going to the back, and
right.
Then one FireWire to the other one. So
right. Well, they're really... You're sort of limited by the number of ports that a given device has. Usually, external drives will have two ports, one in and one out, so you can daisy chain them. But there's really no preferred topology, correct me back there if I'm wrong, for how to connect them. Obviously, if you have a device that only has one port, you can only
have it at the end of the chain, but there's some that have two, some have three. The higher end chassis will have three.
And then, I have a dual processor
2.5. Uh-huh. Well, the computer itself will have three, I think.
It's two 400-watt.
Isn't there two in the back and one in the front?
No, this one, the
dual core. That's what I thought, yeah.
Hello?
There are FireWire hubs out there that will allow you to connect more than one. The only problem is you're sharing the bandwidth.
So yeah, I was wondering about that. Yeah.
Are you constantly accessing all of them at one time?
No. But at the moment, I'm trying to move stuff around and reform.
Right.
So I need them all.
I have one that I got for Christmas, and my son bought it out at Larry's. It's about $50, and I think it has seven places. And I don't use them all at once either, but
seven?
It's the convenience.
Are you sure you're not talking about a USB hub? Wow.
No, I have several in the port wire.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very good.
And well, the main thing is it's just so much more convenient.
Absolutely.
Some don't mount. And that was my next question. How do you get it to mount? Sometimes they don't mount. Like one won't mount, or the other won't mount. I have two Lissies and one in my book.
The one that doesn't mount is usually a Lissier drive.
No, it's been the MyBook.
I've had the C drives and go to mount. Usually I have to turn them off and turn back on.
I do that. And then I
don't recognize it.
Have you opened up Disk Utility? Because it should see everything that's out there. And it will allow you, it'll show you the drive even if it isn't mounted. And so you might be able to figure out why it's not mounting. Maybe the drive just hasn't been formatted, and therefore the computer isn't ready to mount it yet.
You already are copying files to and from that drive.
Yes.
Okay, if it's already formatted, then there's something else going on.
You constantly leave them plugged in. Try turning them off and unplugging them every once in a while. I've had two FireWire hard drive units that absolutely hate being plugged in all the time. One of them has some sort of sleep timer in it, and it never wants to wake back up. And the other one has a thermal trip in it. And it's a very sensitive thermal trip. So after it's been running for a long time, it just goes ahead and unmounts itself and turns itself off. And you can't reset it until you actually unplug the power and turn off. It's very frustrating.
What's frustrating is all these cords, and sometimes it trips one and it'll unplug itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's bad, right?
It's not good. The drives don't like to. What do we got here?
Other world computers.
Yeah.
Search FireWire will tell you which PCI cards works and which GPIOs and all that.
Right.
Or, having just found a source to buy a FireWire card to give yourself more FireWire ports on your new PI. So you open up that door and you slip this card in, and it gives you three or four more FireWire slots.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you get the right version of the backplane.
Yeah.
Right.
That's why I'm going to this site.
And Larry should also be able to help you out with that. Mac resource.
Yeah, the connection isn't overly fast here.
I just searched FireWire card.
Okay. So what do you do with your Mac while we're waiting for this?
What do I do?
As far as connected drive.
Yeah.
What was that?
Besides connected drive.
Well, I'm a designer, graphic designer.
Yeah. Very good.
Well, I was working at White Tiger Printing.
Okay.
So I was an art director there for.
So let's see here.
I just started my own business a few weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Well, I was getting laid off, so I was kind of like, well, I got it.
What do you do? Yeah.
So, but it's okay because I got them on retainer. Now,
for that, you
it.
Really need the.
I'm teaching
no,
it right
now.
Hmm?
So,
oh,
let me just say G5.
Actually, some of them probably work right with PCI because of PCI Express.
Well, that's why I'm thinking, you know. It's.
There you go.
Okay. There we go.
You have business cards?
Yeah, 800.
Yeah, hmm? I just printed a whole bunch because I have a great printer in LA. So if you guys have any business cards, I got it.
Yeah, this guy right here.
Yes, only two ports.
Two ports.
But I don't know if I have any.
Well, no, two 800 ports and one 400 port. That's not what we want.
I know. I always do, but I've got cards for everybody I'm printing.
What is this down here? Well, there are several up there. Some 400 and some combined 400, 800. But all the ones that I see here that are just purely 400 are two ports.
How many hard drives are you connecting on?
She's had three. She's got three right now. But I mean, she has something internal to the machine, so it's not like... Right. She can use the port in the machine for one. So this would add enough ports that each drive... Well, she has a G5.
I didn't think that was
The last.
I searched under G5 here.
Okay. The original one was X.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a question, though.
Express.
Yeah. There's a big difference.
No, I mean X, not Express.
Yeah, so that one worked.
Yeah. These are all Express.
Yeah.
At one point I found one on the side, but that was too much.
Yeah, these are all, well, you know, PCIe X is now getting to be a little harder to find.
Yeah. But a regular PCI card should work in the X slot, which is right at 32. I had occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's got to be keyed the right way, though.
Yeah.
I found that.
Any other flashes?
Well, lots of them,
on
good.
On the HBug site, we've got a thing about Airport Extreme 802.11n and 802.
Mm-hmm.
Can you...
Okay. Okay, Bob Dorman brought up a very good question. There's this news story up on the website, and let me just see if I can't go back to what I had on the new version of the page, since I have it, I think, here somewhere. Get the whole story up. Network could be a little faster here, folks. Okay, so there's the... Let me just... Let's see here. Enlarge this a little bit so that you can read this. Okay. A little bit of a background story to this. Apple at Macworld Expo announced a new version of the Airport base station. Okay, of course, ever since 802.11... G, it's called Extreme, okay, whatever that word means. Before it was just regular. But so now they have another version, 802.11n, which is a much faster standard. So now this new version comes out. However, what computers talk to it? Well, it turns out that quietly last fall, Apple started installing the chipsets on laptops and Mac Pro desktop machines for 802.11n. So you would say, okay, great, that's out. So you can just download a patch and voila, it works, right? Not so fast. It appears that our friends inside the Beltway in Washington, D.C. have blessed us with new laws that affect accounting rules. And so therefore, that is to say, Apple could not count these computers as being fully sold until this feature is enabled. Hence, they sold you a computer without this feature, and now you have to pay a nominal fee to enable it. And so for $2, you can enable that feature if you have one of those computers. Now, if you buy the base station, the new base station, you get on the CD the enabler, so you don't have to pay for that. So in other words, if you want to use 802.11n on the machines that can do that and not buy Apple's base station, you pay $2.
How do you find out if you need it, or how do you find out what you've got?
Well,
basically, if memory serves me, that, let's see here, let me just go to the Apple's page. I don't know if it says much more. But I know recent laptops, both MacBooks and MacBook Pros do it. Mac Pros, desktop machines will do it. The better of the iMacs will do it, not the 17-inch, but the 20 and 24-inch will do it. But that's all only Core Duo machines. So if you have anything less than a Core Duo, it will not be part of the chipset.
What did the first MacBook have?
Just a Core 2. Excuse me, a Core Duo versus a Core 2 Duo. I trip over my tongue because of all these twos in different forms here. We're talking about Core 2 Duos that support this, not Core Duos. Okay, the old Core Duos, the first generation Intel Macs don't. Okay. It's only the second generation ones.
How do you find out
whether
or not it is good for A, B, C, G, N?
Well, let me see. Let me see here what you can get out of system profilers. Let's see here. Where are they hiding the airport card? Could be the place. But that's not very useful unless you have a place you can search that code for compatibility. I mean, obviously, this computer is ancient by those terms, so I have something very different. Well, yeah, but that's extreme first generation. Okay, this is G. Because this is a nearly four-year-old machine.
You have a Core 2 Duo?
I have one here.
Okay. Yeah, that would be good to look at what it says there.
Believe you in one of those, or is yours just the Core Duo?
Mine's just the Core Duo. Yeah.
You have an old machine, Billy.
I bought it right before the 2 came out. Sorry.
Timing is everything.
Can you go to utilities and network utility?
Certainly.
Mine says modeled.
Yeah, well, it does tell you there what standard you have. But my suspicion is that if you have one that supports N, but you haven't run the enabler yet, it will say the same thing as it says here in mine, namely G. It would have been smart if Apple had a little snippet of code you could download to verify that your computer is ready for it. But hey, I'll be thinking.
Well, after you pay your $199, it will probably tell you that this computer does not support this.
Oh, it will certainly tell you that. You'll just be even more happy. Yes, sir?
I have questions for OS 9.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I'd like to find a color printer that's got a DSD serial connection. Does anybody have an old one?
Oh my God.
The one that I had has died.
Uh huh. So, right.
And
right.
I can't upgrade to go to something else.
What model Mac is this?
630, PC 630. It's not even a power PC.
Oh, okay. So yeah.
The old Canon 210, is that good? I use it on the combo.
Mine's the color?
Yeah.
With a VA connection?
Pardon?
Is it a DNA connection?
I think so, yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you
later. Okay, yeah.
While well, we're talking about old systems, I'm moving out all my old school Macintoshes, all the chassis. The latest one I have on that line is a 7200. And I've got a box about this big software for the old classic system, including developer CDs from about 86 or so to about somewhere in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody wants to use that stuff, I'd rather go to somebody that can use it rather than just a landfill.
Yeah, apropos landfill, I think it's very good that we bring that up. A couple weeks ago, Huntsville Times had a piece on how to get rid of electronics in the Sunday paper. And because I wasn't aware, what do I do with these old boat anchors? You know, monitors, unfortunately, have a finite lifespan, and they go bad. So what do you do with them? And I had several old monitors and TVs, and I found out every first Saturday each month, you just go to the Huntsville City Dump, and they take them for free. And the keyword is free. We are fortunate that they do. Other places, you pay good money to get rid of CRTs. So
that's the same place has first, material, right?
First, what?
That's the same outfit that the same group that takes hazardous waste.
They take hazardous waste at the same time, yes. Same place. Yeah, yeah. I just want to remind people, because all of us have this habit of accruing more and more of these old boxes that no longer work, and eventually we need to get rid of them. And instead of just putting them on the curb and hoping somebody picks them up, it's better to go there and dispose of them properly.
You might say where and when.
Okay, first Saturday. Now, let's see here. It's at the southern end of Lehman Ferry Road. So if you're going Airport Road west from the parkway through the park there, hang a left onto Lehman Ferry and follow the arrows. They will have signs how to get there.
From 9 to 11 or something like that?
No, I think it's longer than that. I went in the morning, so yeah. I don't know the exact times, but you, something like that, yeah.
I know my dad's a supervisor.
Oh, okay.
It's good for painting and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
They actually use the oil, you need to change oil in the collar, they take all that stuff.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
Am I possibly going to have to buy a new printer? Apple MacBook, or about this MacBook? Because the printer I have, the compatibility says the 10.2. Does that necessarily keep my
It just means that when it was produced, the printer was, that was the latest version of the operating system. It is rare that an old printer going forward will be unsupported, because the newer versions of the operating systems tend to have drivers for all the older printers. I mean, unless they're really old, like what we were talking about here a moment ago, something that has a DIN 8 connector. There's no such a plug on your current Mac, so therefore it won't have a driver for it. But anything that comes with a USB connector or has an Ethernet connection so you can print to it, or maybe even Bluetooth, that'll work with any current machine. More compatible than others?
Yeah, with Apple. Because I remember the old Apple writer was a Canon, really.
Right, right. Actually, Apple's had HPs and Canons and all sorts of other things under the hood over the years, Epsons, yeah. But the thing is, it's hard to go wrong with HPs. Okay, they're sort of more or less the house vendor.
That's what I have
You know, it depends what kind of printer. Are you talking inkjet or are you talking laser?
Inkjet.
Inkjet. Okay, well, inkjet
There are many other possibilities. Epson works very well. Canon. I mean, I personally have HP and Epson inkjet printers, but laser printers, I stick with HP. Yes, sir?
I stumbled across a couple of gigs in a crash reporter log. Mm-hmm. I don't recall ever crashing, and I've got 2 megs worth of. A, what's the function, and B, can I dump it?
You certainly can dump it. Unless you want to send somebody the information about it. Actually, matter of fact, now you can turn this off. Now, having said that, I don't remember off the top of my head the incantation you have to give the computer to do this, but I remember at one point having to turn it on because I was running into a problem and I was talking, emailing back and forth with the developer, and they wanted some logs, so I turned it on. But by default, certain things will write to it regardless, typically Apple software. But some third-party software will do so too. But for other things, you have to manually enable that. But as far as needing it, no. If you want that space, yeah, if you want that space, just, you know, move it to your nearest trash can. Yeah, yeah, you certainly can do that. Yeah?
I'm going to Bell South DSL Live, and every now and then someone sends me an email that's got a patch with, you know, 6, 8 megs or something like that on it. It takes a long, you know, quite a well, like, little minutes to make it download it.
Uh-huh.
Is there some way that when you see one of those things downloading, you can, there's some key that you can hit and just terminate that?
Well, what you can do, I'm assuming you're using Apple Mail?
Right.
Okay, you go under your preferences and go under advanced, let's see here, you know, mailbox behaviors. Somewhere in here, I remember where you can specify, let's see, no. Hmm? No, somewhere there's a place where you can tell things to limit, or am I thinking of an older piece of software where you could do that? Because I remember in the past I've always actually disabled that because I wanted the whole thing, usually rather than...
What about mailbox behaviors? Yeah. What about rules?
No, well, actually...
Rules applies at local.
Yeah. It has to be downloaded before a rule is applied. That's correct. But let's see here. Hey, that's not what I meant. that's what I meant to do. Let's see here. Yeah, see, you can only sort by attachment names here, nothing else with attachments. Well, of course, you could hack list to do other things, but generally speaking...
Is there a particular reason you didn't want them to be downloaded?
Well, it's just because it's taking them too long to pull those down.
Say 95% of the things always open everything, but then every now and then someone gets a bad way to this big file. Just pictures or something.
Yeah, I'm sort of thinking, you know.
I'll tell you what, really tremendous is when I worked at NASA, someone sent me about 700 or 800 page documents.
Oh, that's lovely of them.
And when I went over the mail, it took up in 30, 40 minutes.
Yeah, block everything, doesn't it? Yeah. You know, typically these days, a lot of ISPs actually limit the size of the attachments that you can receive. Certainly companies do. I was actually yesterday sending a set of attachments for a colleague who's been nominated for some prize, and the mail server at the other end didn't want to take it. So what I ended up doing is uploading his files to our web server and sending an email a message to these people, download this, because your server is not accepting the mail. You know? So that's not unusual, but that's really what you ought to be doing when you're sending files that big, is to tell...
put it up some server and let people download it if they wish, rather than forcing it upon them. Because if you've got a finite size mailbox, you know, some places you only are limited to 10 megs, or somebody sends you a 9.5 meg file, you know, you got a problem real quick. Well, the other solution to that is just get yourself a Gmail or Yahoo account. There, it's your choice if you download things or not.
This, like Marius was talking about, finding a service to go put that file up so you can notify people to download it. Box.net is really awesome. I love it. It's free. I don't do the $4.99 a month one, and it works perfectly well for me. And I even do believe they've got a dashboard widget. So if you're into that kind of thing, you can do it. But you just go sign up and...
Can anybody get into it, though?
Yes, that's the whole point.
You can tell it to share files out to notify a friend that you just uploaded this file, and it'll send them a link on how to get to it.
How do they make their money?
By people paying for the $4.99 a month one.
There's a hook.
There is another catch. You can't upload one single file that's above, I think, 10 megs through their website. But there's ways around that, but we won't get into it.
Is it accepting iWeb files seamlessly? Comcast does it.
I know what you're talking about. The iLife iWeb stuff. This is not a web page hosting. No. This is just basically like file. A file box online.
Yeah, okay. File sharing, really. Yeah.
But I've used it a couple of times. It's got a nice interface. Public sharing, private sharing, work groups, all kinds of good stuff. Go check it out. Easy to remember location, box.net. Mm-hmm. And I'll get to Joe here in a second. There is an article on Apple Insider, if I can remember what the article number is.
About the airports and express. Mm-hmm.
And it tells you how to find out if your computer has that capability. While I'm waiting for this, Joe, you had a question.
Yeah, not that's a flash. It's
flash.
I just become aware of it in the last day. I do a good bit of printing on CDs and DVDs. And generally with the printer, I use an Epson R320.
Mm-hmm.
Pictures come out fine, the details fine, but they come out matte, kind of flat finish.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are at least four manufacturers who are making glossy, printable, upprintable DVDs. They're probably in bulk about three times as much as you'll pay for a regular DVD, which is like 60, 70 cents for the new ones.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, at some of the comments I've seen on some of these websites and discussion groups, very, very praise, a lot of praise for them,
mm-hmm.
such that there's at least one that has nano pores supposedly in the surface that the ink gets down into. It will not wash or smudge.
Awesome.
And people have left these discs inside of water for a couple of days and they're not fine. But apparently that's the next thing. Unfortunately, I have made a bulk purchase on both. About 2 weeks ago.
Can you email me that link? Can you email me that link? That article? Thanks. Like I mentioned to Marius, or asked him to pull up the network utility and how it said that he has the...
The G?
Yeah.
I closed it.
Right here. Right where it says that. If you've got one of the newer laptops and it says this right here. If it's 802.11abg, then your computer is not N-enabled, but has the ability to be N-enabled. After it's enabled, it just throws the N on the end.
So in other words, if it's saying BG or just G, no go.
Yeah.
Okay, now that we know that, what does it do for you if you enable it?
If you enable it, and if you have an N base station, you can increase your speed and distance by, I think it's what, 3 times?
It's more than that.
Well
real world. Real world.
Real world, about 3 times.
Does that work with all brands?
If the base station is
N.
Right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not going to gain a thing.
They're building N's that work by the standard.
Standard isn't official yet.
Yeah.
It's not official.
Nope. But it's getting very close.
If that's true,
then mine
should be upgraded.
Well, I'll give you $2.
If that's true. Because mine is not a 2. That's
the
only one.
All right.
That's interesting. According to this, if it says that, then you can enable N. So.
You said if you had one of the new airports, if you had the on the CD, you have...
If you buy the base station, the CD will have the enabler on it. That is correct. Of course, you pay a good bit of money for the base station, so that $2 fee is waived.
But why upgrade to an end if you don't have the base station?
You don't.
Don't.
Yeah.
Until you get a base station that's N... compatible, be it from Apple or some third party, there's no point.
If it's incompatible, then it's free to upgrade.
If you buy the Apple one.
If you buy the Apple one.
Oh, okay.
If you buy it from Joe Schmoe's Access Points Incorporated, you will not get that.
Then you got to pay the $2.
But then if you purchased a wireless hub, that there are many of them out there that has the end capability.
Right.
That would also give you that capability.
Right. Correct. At that time, you want to spend the $2.
Yeah.
Got a question back there.
Would it make a difference if your wireless hub has the N capability and you're only connecting by wire to it?
Well, if you're going by wire, there's no point whatsoever.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, you want to do as much to cripple your wireless if you're only using it wired. I mean, that is an issue that I've run into. My parents, for instance, they have a wired network in their house.
And their router went bad. So what do? You go to the store and buy a new router, right? Well, it turns out the wired router was twice as expensive as the wireless because no one buys these things anymore. So I had wire remote control over 2,500 miles to tell them, how do you cripple this thing so that the whole neighborhood doesn't use your access point? You know, it's kind of silly that these base stations aren't set up in such a way that you can turn the wireless feature entirely off. You can't. The only thing you can do is make sure the encryption is strong enough that the odds of somebody breaking in are near nil.
Destroy the internet.
Yeah, I think she's been patiently waiting back here.
Where on the map do I go now that my eyesight isn't what it used to be? My printer, when I'm printing, the font is so small I'm not seeing it as well as I used to.
Oh.
Is there somewhere on my Mac that I can go?
You mean on your printed material the font is too small?
Right. You know, when I print something out, it looks nice on
the screen.
But when it's printed, it's
much
smaller. Is there
somewhere
I can
learn
it?
What software are we using?
But what are you printing from?
What software?
No, like if I'm printing something off
when you're on the net.
No, even when I'm printing something off of Apple Word.
Okay.
It comes out smaller.
Huh.
You just have to increase your font size.
Yeah, well.
Is that the function of the printer or the function of the...
It should be the software, not the printer.
Does the software have a percentage magnification somewhere?
Yes, I'm
okay. So it's something in the printer I need to look for.
In their software.
If you go under page setup,
you've
got the scaling right here, 100%. If that's set in anything other than 100%, it may reduce things.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's one possibility. I ran into a problem here this week. A colleague of mine had to send a report, and for the life of us, we couldn't figure out why this page on the 8.5 by 11 letter size paper was only on about the top 2/3 and all to one side. Couldn't figure it out. I went, looked at the magnification and, you know, all those things. Couldn't figure it out. Turned out he was using Word and he had track revisions turned on, which means there are these little bubbles that are generated on the right-hand column saying so-and-so made this change when. And it took me about 25 minutes until I realized that was enabled. Turn it off and boom, everything was back to normal. You know, so sometimes there are quirky things like that can hit you. Yeah.
Let me follow up on Betty's.
Okay.
Betty, when you print your document out, is it printing to one side or
no,
is it printing to
normal
side?
Yeah, I'm assuming it is. I know. There's something else going on. I mean, I'm just saying, sometimes they're quirky things.
I've never gone to wherever they was. It just gone to a moment.
Right.
It could be.
Page setup, that's the first place to check.
That's probably where I need to go.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I'll also check and see what font size you actually have that document set for.
Well,
that's there. Okay, I had never gone to
Yeah,
but
if you're in AppleWorks, if you go to the lower left corner, you can change the size of what you're viewing on the screen.
Right, but that should not change how it prints.
You have AppleWorks on that machine?
No, I don't.
See,
you're having trouble reading the printing document.
Right.
But
small print,
right.
She's looking at it. Looked big on the screen.
Right, right. Yeah, if you zoom in.
You have something to add to that?
You know, at work I have this problem with text edit. Whenever I would be viewing the window small, it would print small. But whenever I would view it big, it would print big. So that was beyond me. I had never experienced that before. That big print. How you're viewing it on the window. Like if the window was bigger, it would print it smaller.
Really?
So that's just bizarre. Because that never happened on my computer.
Well, yeah. It's something I haven't run into because I do all my editing in either BB Edit or Text Wrangler. So they're a little bit more controlled.
The software that comes with the Mac.
Right, right. Well, that's what I just had open. But you know, this is what I use on machines where I don't want to buy additional licenses of BB Edit. Yeah, sure, why not? But this is really much more powerful than Text Edit. And it's free. Keep thinking about
text
that.
Line?
Yeah. It's just BB Edit Lite, really. Renamed.
And where do they look at that?
Bare bones.
I use their mail script.
Yeah, that's a good program, but as I was mentioning earlier, it has a little bit of a learning curve from what I understand. Then you go under products, Text Wrangler, there you go.
I have a question regarding a Wacom tablet that I have plugged in at home. Well, when I had it at work, it worked fine. This is my personal Wacom tablet.
Right.
That stopped working at home. Then I took it to work, and it worked fine for like over a year. And now I took it back home, and it doesn't work anymore.
Oh, really?
It's so weird. It skips, and then
have you,
it starts putting stuff in places.
Have you gone to Wacom and gotten yourself the latest drivers?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's
so
weird.
I'm not sure why.
Can I make a recommendation? Unplug your mouse and see if it stops skipping. If it stops skipping when you unplug your mouse, you've probably got to go back and either remove those drivers and reinstall them, or just try to reinstall them again.
So when you say remove the mouse, you mean like
just unplug it?
Just turn it off.
Because I do have a wireless mouse plugged in as well. Mm-hmm.
So you have both wired and wireless mouse, or just a wireless mouse?
I have a wireless mouse, and I have the Wavecom.
Okay. Turn off your wireless mouse and see if it works. Because sometimes those tablets can function as a mouse, and you might want to also go in and check your settings, see if I have my drivers installed. But make sure that it's not trying to mimic the mouse. If it is, then that wireless mouse is going to send out a signal saying, I'm staying still, and that can cause some jitters.
But at work, I had a wireless mouse plugged in as well. I remember getting it. Maybe just the settings.
They don't like each other. Yeah. But I've had that problem in the past, and it was always either my drivers weren't installed correctly, or I had it set to where it would function as a mouse.
So if I uninstall the drivers, do I take the mouse and uninstall?
I haven't uninstalled it in a really long time, so I keep it set.
You should download the latest drivers from the manufacturer.
I
did my tablet recently. But I mean, in there.
Yeah, but we just talked about that.
In there, though, it has the uninstall instruction for the current.
Right.
When you download the latest, greatest, there should be some instructions in the README or how to file some comment that tells you how to go about uninstalling.
Oh, that's interesting. I really need to remember that I have this one.
I have got one of the small ones.
What do you know?
I think this machine was
enabled with gestures, but oh well.
I got the Bluetooth tablet and the fast user switch and it kills it.
Really?
And here causes it.
Brings it back.
Huh?
All
right.
Okay. Any other questions?
If not,
okay.
Let's go to our regularly unscheduled program. Right.
Can you try to connect to the access point lazy pants?
Lazy pants, alrighty.
Alright. Let me get this over. And so we were demonstrating how to change the password.
Until resetting it.
Yes. Settings. And. Alright. Try it.
Okay, what's the password?
There's the password.
Okay. Or don't want to remember.
I remember seeing you at the meeting day. Do
you remember why?
There we go. Okay.
And,
okay, I'm in.
Why don't we go ahead and demonstrate one more time how to find out what our router's IP address is.
Okay, so let's see here.
How do we find
out? Okay. Let's see here what our network control panel says. Airport,
Okay, let's look. Make sure we highlight airport. Click configure. Click TCP/IP. Uh-huh.
Yes. Can we turn the lights off, Marius?
Sure. Fortunately, the ambient lighting doesn't work very well, but it'll be okay. Okay, so you can see this is the IP address that my computer has been assigned, but this is the one that David was talking about, the router address. Okay, so just by going and choosing from the airport from the network preference pane, I can figure out what these settings are.
So highlight the router IP address.
Right. Copy. Yeah. Realizing that even though this looks like something printed out, you can cut and paste these things. So you say, okay, edit, copy. All right. And let's paste that in here. And it also add. And boom.
There we go.
We're in.
So after we went through all that rigmarole of beating the Comcast guy senseless because he doesn't know what he's doing, and on the phone an hour with Bell South because they don't know what they're doing, and we finally got our wireless router set up and all of our computers connected, and we want to start configuring it, this is where we go. This is the first page to see when you log in. And you notice how when Marius first tried to connect to this, it asked him for a password. That's very important. Let's touch on that first. Why don't you click wireless settings?
Right over here.
What that wireless password does is it prevents people that you don't know and trust from gaining access to your system for the most part. We'll get to that part here.
Yep, yep.
I just do the regular WEP, there's WEA, and I cannot remember what it stands for.
Billy?
Wi-Fi protected access.
Probably. It's wireless protected access. So type in a passphrase. Let's go with HMOD.
All right. Passphrase, okay. All upper or all lowercase or any preferences?
Doesn't really matter.
Okay. All right.
And hit generate. See, now it's got this really short key there. That's 64-bit. That's pretty easy to crack. And you notice right here, it says encryption strength. Let's do 128-bit. Make it a little bit more challenging for the people driving by. And we expect you to remember that number like your social security number or driver's license. Not really. Now, here's a really good tip. If you've got a thumb drive, copy that, put it into a text file, put it in your thumb drive, and tell it to...
oh, that's a good one.
Okay, did you accidentally get to sleep or something?
Huh? It does not want to copy this, for whatever reason.
Can this be set up on any wireless router?
Yes, the wireless 100. Why don't you right click on it and say copy? After you highlight it.
Hello.
But anyway, what I was saying, copy that right there.
Hey, finally did.
Make a text file.
Oh, how handy. I happen to have a text editor open.
Now, wait, hold on one second. This is what I do. I've got a lot of access points that I set up and I have access to. So go back to that text file.
All right.
If you don't mind.
Hello. What am I doing? It's kind of hard doing it this way. I probably should be looking forward rather than looking backward.
I type the name of the access point before I put that key.
Okay.
So this access point is named Lazy Pants because generally when I'm at home online, I'm in my Lazy Pants. And then I'll put some sort of note saying home or wherever. Generally, my access points have a lot more functional names than that. And so I store that on a thumb drive.
So if anything ever happens to my computer or I want to get someone online on my system really quick, I just pop that thumb drive in, open up that text file, and I've got that really long key that I need to get them online. Otherwise, I've got to sit there and say, okay, 2-9-echo-9-rover, and it's just too long and complicated to try to do when I can copy and paste. Okay, let's go back to there. Hit apply.
Always keep on. If until you hit apply, it doesn't do a thing.
And it's actually going to reboot that router. So he should be disconnected, and he is. If you see his little wireless...
This is completely fake. This is the computer running a little GIF animation, because you can see the wireless connection up there is dead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Only when those bars come back up do I actually have a connection.
Right, you actually have
to go connect to
that. Yeah.
Right.
Because we have enabled. Okay. We got to change that to X. Got to change this to that, because those numbers are actually hexadecimal. And he just pasted. So you don't have to type it in, and you can also say remember password in my keychain. If you're constantly going to be accessing it, that's a good thing to do. Why is it not letting you say okay?
I don't think it's supposed to.
Yeah, I think it only got a fraction of the key.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Where's my bag? I'm trying to type like one more letter.
What?
Or just type in something at the end.
See if it...
It's not even letting me type anything.
Alright, then type that letter off. Make it go off.
And put that back.
1-8-20.
See the capability.
Is it not letting you type it off?
No, it's not letting me type anything beyond that.
That's why it hasn't worked yet. It's so secure you can't even get into it yourself.
Now.
There.
Did you see that? That major trick I just pulled? I unselected the hex. I went and selected the ASCII, went back to hex, and suddenly now it's happy with it. Now go figure that one out. This is another one of those entries in the logbook of undocumented features.
That's a bug.
Absolutely.
It may be a paste-in bug.
But you're live on it, so therefore I can't be, all right?
Could set this network up between two remote locations?
Meaning
another home?
This particular device does not create a wireless bridge.
But the one in the ball will.
Yeah. It will actually take the wireless to wired. So it will connect to that device and then pump that through the Ethernet port. So you could have that at your home. And then, less than 150 feet away, you can have that device and connect to it and connect computers up to a switch on that. Or have that extend the range of that.
I'm talking about miles.
No.
There will be something in a few years, maybe, that does that, called WiMAX. But that will cost serious money. It's not something you can do on your own. That is something where the AT&T types will be providing you, just like a regular ISP.
And you also have to buy the frequency too.
Well, that's why I'm saying the AT&T types will have bought that, and you will be loaning it for a fee from them.
Monthly fee, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So we now have our wireless access point secured. That way, people driving by can't as easily access it. And with some work and effort, and if you ever see a car that looks kind of junked and it's got a weird antenna pointing at your house,
be paranoid.
They're not the pizza guy.
Where did you get the account name? Did you make that up, or did that
what account?
The account name.
That's not made up. That's generated some by something.
Well, no, that's actually model number of router.
That's what I thought. Generated by some set of engineers after long meetings.
So this just shows up.
We can change it to whatever we want, but that's just the default.
Okay.
Now let's go try changing the password again.
All right.
It's left side column. Set password down about an inch. Messing with password.
Center now.
Under maintenance.
Yeah. There it is. I'm totally blind this morning. All right.
Well, password is password.
Right.
And let's make a new password Insta. Write that password down, put it with...
Hold on. What happened here?
Your marriage license.
Yeah. Put it with your marriage license, the deed to your house, tattoo it on your firstborn. And let's just hope we can actually remember it this time. Hey, there we go.
Amazing.
Now, the reason why we do that is because if someone happens to get into your network or they're attached to your network, they could potentially go into your router and poke holes through the firewall or play practical jokes.
Not all of us, David.
Certain people will do that, others won't.
So, let's see. Anyone have any questions about... Well, okay, that's fine. I'm going to go back to wireless settings.
Wireless settings, okay. All right.
There is a particular feature on this router, the other one.
Which one?
The one up there. There we go.
Well, that's cute that they have two. Okay. The same name?
Yeah. Well, this is basically one of the fans. You see this mode? It says G only. Well, I happen to live in a house where there are people that have B only cards. If you allow a B card on your network, it slows you down to the lowest common denominator. Them. Mm-hmm. I don't like that. I like my speed. So I set it to G only. Whatever you feel comfortable with, that's what I do. It works out great for me because I am in a mixed environment. Let's see. Is there anything else here we can go before we go to the next wireless setting page?
Want to go to this one?
Scroll down a little bit.
What again is the passphrase?
If you want to create and generate a key based on, let's say, a password, you can type it in there. And every time you type in HMUG in all caps, it should always come up with that really long key. If you're trying to set up multiples of this or you're using the Netgear software on your PC or your Windows machine, and it asks you for the wireless encrypted passphrase. If you just type in HMUG there, it should generate that key.
So you type HMUG in that?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Initially. That's correct.
Right.
And it generated that 26 character hex key. But I copy and paste my keys. I never have to really worry about that passphrase. But if you are in a situation that you need that and you're dealing with PC users who use Netgear equipment on the Windows side, that's helpful.
Did this software come with your router, or is it a software on the internet you can go to use it?
What we're seeing here?
Yes.
This is actually built into the router.
Firmware.
Yeah. This basically, think of that router as a very basic computer. And it's running some sort of kernel, some sort of firmware, and it's farming out this website, web page to manage it.
Let's
go ahead and click.
Yeah, typically it is in its firmware that can be upgraded. As a matter of fact, there are a number of hacker types that go replace whatever system, operating system that is embedded with flavors of Linux with much more powerful firewalls than what is built in.
On that note, Cisco, who owns Linksys, actually condones that. They have made their operating system on several of their devices open source, and you can go in there and add features, which is kind of cool.
Very nice.
I don't do that. I have no need.
For me, it's more a matter of no time.
You notice here it says enable wireless router radio. If you just want this to be a wired device, unclick it, and you've got yourself a really secure wireless network that is not on. Now, enable SSID broadcast. The SSID broadcast is basically, you know how 31 and ZYP and all the radio stations have to do a station announce every so many minutes? Well, that's kind of what that is. The SSID is the station announce saying, hey, I'm LazyCast, I'm available on channel 3.
That's why you get that nice little note up there on the menu saying Lazy Pants. Otherwise, you have to use other to disable it.
Setting it up, I hate using other. I like it broadcast for the first time when I'm connecting and setting it up, and then afterwards, I turn it off.
Again, it is a measure against drive-by bandwidth. Users.
Now, these drive-by people, what they do is their computer is out there listening to the air.
Right.
Listening to that frequency, finding out who's available. The catch is the SSID broadcast only protects you when you're not using the wireless network. If you're using it, you're already broadcasting.
That's right.
You're broadcasting who you are and what channel already. Now, most people are using it during those hours. The people who do what they call war driving, driving around, find wireless networks that are open or that you can break into, they know what key hours are, when you're going to be home, when you're going to be using it. So generally, you want to turn that one off right after you finish setting up all of your computers. It's like really simple. Yes, sir.
What kind of a range does an airport extreme have?
The new one is 300 feet, and the old one is generally about 150.
You say old when you mean G.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, the old flavor airport extreme.
802.11B and G are about 150 feet theoretical maximum. N is about 300 feet theoretical maximum. So, if you're using your G and you put it in the center of your house, generally, no one's going to be able to really reach it that far away from your house. You can make Pringles cans into wireless antennas that can improve performance on sensing networks. It's a waveguide, and the radio waves go in there perfectly. It just happened to be a coincidence that a Pringles can be an antenna for wireless networks. And that increases the range just a little bit. But that's kind of a side thought. You see here where it says wireless card access list. Could you click on that, please? Let's say I want to get really, really secure. And even if someone can go through and decipher that 26-character hex key, I can come in here and tell it, don't let anything but these computers with these MAC addresses in. So I've got another layer of protection. And you see there where his interface has that hardware address, also known as a MAC address. not to be associated with Macintosh. Mac meaning machine. It is right there.
Right here.
So click on your little dot, please, and put in the device name if you want. So it's. And hit add. So now he's added his computer to the list. Turn on access control.
Let's see here. Okay. I assume it'll reboot things.
If his computer was not in there, if he turned on access control, he would not be able to reconnect to that wireless access point. So if you've got that 128-bit hex key, 26-character 128-bit key in there, and this, it's really, really good protection. Probably really screwed up the grammar on that one. But the hex key can be deciphered. There's software out there that you can download, runs in Linux. People who drive around know about it.
There's Mac versions of this available, too.
You can hook up that software to a GPS and just drive around all day and then make a map of all the wireless networks and stuff.
The software and hardware I was showing you last time at the meeting nicely interfaces with this sort of tool.
And so that software that can decrypt that key can't fake your MAC address. So if you've got that MAC address on top of that hex key, if they get through that one layer, they've got another layer that they have to bust through. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot trickier, and they're not going to waste their time with it.
There's softer targets out there.
Sounds like it'd be a waste of time for somebody driving around getting into my computer.
No, it's not that they're getting in your computer. They're getting into your bandwidth, and if they're doing things that are, well, let's say, less than legal in terms of their activities online, it will seem as if it is coming from your address, and that can get you into legal hot water.
Would that be what slows your computer down sometimes?
Not likely.
Let's see. You're still connected.
Yes, I know.
Probably just have to click on the wireless settings.
Let's just click on this again. All right.
But now my computer can't access it because he's got me blocked. Oh well, I can fix that later.
Well, we can undo that.
What else should we touch on? How many people here want to schedule when you have access to the internet?
Right. It's only if you have kids in the house and you want them to do their homework a certain time of day or get to sleep a certain time of day.
Exactly. Click on router status.
Mm-hmm. David, all of this would be different if you have a different router, though.
Yes.
It's going to be different, but very similar.
All the principles that we're discussing are common to pretty much all routers. Some will have a few more of these controls enabled, others will have a few less. For instance, this one you can turn the radio off, the one that my folks bought, you can't. You know, so that sort of thing.
I just noticed something here to talk about. How many people here have wireless phones in their home? Have you ever experienced any kind of wireless access being dropped off when using it?
Yep.
Channel. You see down here where it says wireless port, channel is channel 3. There are 11 channels for B and G. I don't know about N. I have to look at that. Try changing it. Go from 1 to 11 until it stops disconnecting. I used to work in an office, and we had, in our office alone, I think 4 wireless phones, and...
Right here is where you change that.
I had to go through there, and it took me a good 3 weeks to figure out what channel finally worked. Because we were in a rented office complex, and it was just a complete nightmare. My phone would ring, and it would bump me off the internet. My boss's phone would ring after I changed the channel, bought me off the internet. I got really frustrated. But I finally changed the channel to one that wasn't being used.
Well, don't a lot of wireless phones automatically do some channels?
Not a lot of those. Most of the time, the wireless phones, cordless phones, will actually bump you before your computer will bump them.
The problem I've seen is that a wireless phone will try a channel, and if it can get through, it's good. But if it doesn't, it tries another channel, and each one of those will bump you off.
At this point, does anyone have any questions?
Isn't it true that it's only the 2.4 megahertz wireless phones that interfere, but the 900s do not, and the 5.8s do not?
2.4 is very, very susceptible to bumping you off. I've had a 900 megahertz phone bump me off before, but that's because it was a very special circumstance, and it was sitting right next to my laptop.
I think the 900s are pretty decent.
Basically, I had the cordless phone base station, and the antenna was right next to my antenna, my PowerBook, and I didn't realize that at the time. It was one of the best stuff. Any other questions that I would like to answer?
And I just happened to think of something that might be a problem.
Okay.
Wireless phones and wireless mouses will interact. They're on the same S-band.
Is it Bluetooth on there too?
I think so. Bluetooth is 2.4 as far as I remember as well.
Bluetooth will frequency hop, which is a totally different game, whereas this is hitting on a channel. Okay. Yeah.
Keep in mind, too, microwaves and houses also will interfere with your router as well.
Any other questions?
No lunch today.
Any other questions before you move along?
No.
All right. One of the nice features about this router is the email. You can set it up to email you if there's a problem. I had it set up for about a year. I've never gotten an email, so I turned it off. It can alert you when someone tries to access a blocked site. So let's say you want to block Microsoft.com or Dell.com. I should not know that. But let's say you don't want someone to go to Ask Jeeves for whatever reason. You can block their site, and if they ever try to connect to that site, they can email you telling you someone at this IP address is trying to access that website. So if you have kids, if you have little ones, or you're at a company and you want to block sites, this is the way to do it. That's pretty much it. You just tell it, block this domain name or this keyword.
Could you block out a country?
Not really. It would take a lot of
You can't use any wild cards?
Not all foreign websites end in .jp.
Sure, but I'm obviously, I mean, if you want to block all of China, blocking star.cn isn't going to block everything.
Yeah.
But it will get rid of a good portion of it.
Yes.
But also notice you can, I think you can also do it by IP address, or is that only for trusted?
Only for trusted.
Mm. So you, keyword or domain name, so you can't just put an IP address in there. Otherwise, you can just go and put sub network ranges in there and say, hey, you know, if you're from this particular range, you don't get them.
And that's what Maurice is talking about, that IP address range is for a beefier router, something that's a lot more advanced than this. That's Microsoft.
But notice it's a key word, so I'm assuming that it could probably. Actually, it says something here. So I'm assuming that it might even take. Okay.
And tell it to keyword blocking always.
I suppose we need to apply this before anything happens. Question is it just slow or is it rocking?
Well, we also have the issue of it's not connected to the internet, so.
What?
The wireless router isn't connected.
Oh, yeah, so you got a point there.
You can check it either way right now,
but it works.
It's very effective, I must admit.
Anyway, moving along, that's not well enough. Is there anything on this list, on this left panel, that y'all want to know anything about? You have questions, concerns, just curious?
Yeah, so that's what we've got enabled. But here's another one that you sort of, I just want to gently remind people of. Router, as we mentioned earlier, is a computer. And computer has an operating system. Operating systems have bugs. Hence, there will be upgrades to the operating system from time to time. So just because you bought a router and it works doesn't mean it's safe. Every once in a while, the manufacturer will post a new version of the firmware. Okay? And that will need to be installed. And that, depending on the manufacturer of the router, can be very simple or it can be painful.
Safari question?
Yes?
How did you set the tabs at the top of the screen?
Preferences, tabs, enable tab browsing.
Thank you.
I just plugged my laptop into the router via wire, and it's also showing up in attached devices.
Because it's coming in wired, it's assumed to be permitted.
Yes. If you ever suspect that someone unknowing to you is accessing your access point or your internet, take a look at this. If you see more computers on there that you own or you've let onto your network, someone else is on your network. So take a look at it whenever you add a person to it or a computer. Just try to keep yourself apprised of it every once in a while. Check it. It's not a bad idea.
And here's another one, port forwarding. Okay. If you have things that need to talk to the outside world, this is where you enable those. Okay. So for instance, here they have a pop-up that already has a certain set of predefined services. I don't know what the world Age of Empires is doing here, but...
great game.
Right. And so that's why I'm assuming that you're the one using that.
Actually, that's default.
I know. But the ones that you're most likely to turn on are things like HTTP. Jesus, is scary seeing Telnet as a possibility. Of course, what I would have turned on my system is something like Secure Shell. There's certain of these protocols, just sort of a little security sidebar here, that are not inherently safe. Okay, things like Telnet, FTP, they are fairly insecure and, well, hello, that, you know, you probably shouldn't be turning on.
Now, when you turn these on, you have to direct them to a specific computer.
Right, and that's what this IP address here assume it talks about. That's the machine that actually For example, if I were to add this machine, okay, click add, it would say, okay, AOL Instant Messenger is okay for that computer.
Well, exactly. You can always hop on iChat or AOL Instant Messenger. Just some of the more advanced features like file transferring might not work. Okay. And so if you wanted to hard code it in and tell it every time someone tries to send a file to me, I'm always at this IP address. And so the router will say, hey, it needs to go here. Now, there's an easier way to do that kind of thing with AIM. If you scroll down just a little bit, not the left panel.
The blue bar.
Mm-hmm.
UPnP. That's kind of an automatic port forward, universal plug and play. If someone tries to send me a file, and I'm on two computers, two different screen names on iChat, well, I can't use this default port forwarding because it would always try to send that file to one computer. And that computer is going to be, that's not my username. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, universal plug and play will say, hey, that really needs to go to this computer specifically because that computer is waiting for that request, it sent the request, so that file needs to go to this computer. It automatically figures out that port forwarding for you. So if you've got more than one, AOL Instant Messenger user, it'll automatically figure out what needs to go to which computer. It's pretty cool. I use it. There are a lot of debates on if it's really, really safe. I've never had a problem. Of course, I'm on a Mac.
And these things, your mileage is always variable.
Yeah. There are a few things that you want to block with the universal plug and play. Some of these fancy network computers that support internet printing sometimes also support universal plug and play. And you can literally print to your printer from here in your printer's Tucson, Arizona. That was a lot of fun when I worked around Full City Schools because I put a hole in the firewall and I had it port forwarded to my printer at my office and I would print from home. And I'd be like, yeah, my time card's there, I'll sign it in the morning.
The previous screen, I noticed it listed the server address.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Go back to that.
The server address is which computer you want that service to go to.
Locally, that's within your private network.
Okay, because I've got a G3 iBook hooked up to the iMac with Ethernet through the router. And it has worked, but then I unplug the iBook and put it back together, and now it doesn't work. And the iMac says, when I try to connect, it says the server is disconnected or doesn't exist. And I'm wondering, do I need to go in and check and see what's going on there?
Well, the question here, I think, might be slightly different. I'm assuming that you're using the system, that is to say, the router, the way it came out of the box, right? So therefore, what the router is doing is assigning IP addresses to your computers.
Right.
And if you reconnect them in a different order after rebooting, okay, it may be that the machine that used to be machine number 2 is now machine number 3. And so if you have a number typed in here, it may no longer be the correct one for that computer. So you have to go back, as we said at the beginning, double check what your network address is locally, because this port forwarding may be incorrectly configured.
So basically that internal IP address, let's pretend this table is our internal network. Hey Marius, I'm SSHing you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I connected. Well, Adam, you are a defaultly configured router.
Okay. Oh, up there.
Now if you come from there, you know.
So I want to SSH Marius.
Okay. And I'm going to throw it back at you.
Oh, thanks. Marius, could you please configure your router?
Okay.
Adam?
I want to open up port 22 such that David can SSH.
Okay.
Reboot and let...
I'm going to be down for 30 seconds.
Yes, absolutely. It'll take...
I feel like this is a get a Mac commercial.
Get a router commercial.
I wish I had my camera.
Thank you very much.
And wait. Now, pretend that there's someone in that seat, and we'll call him Henry. So, let's say I want to send a file to Marius through AOL, and Adam is configured with Universal Plug and Play. Well, I've got a file here for Henry, and a file here for Marius. So, I'm talking to Henry, and, hey, Henry, I'm going to send you this really great Flash animation. Here you go, man.
And you have those both configured? Or Universal Plug and Play?
Yes.
Okay.
And so he sends it to Henry, and that one is for Marius. There we go.
Very
I'm
good.
A client.
I'm a router.
Very good.
Good one.
So, we've got 5 minutes left.
I think it's time to quit.
Any questions?
I used to work for Huntsville City Schools and the Educational Technology Center, teaching teachers how to use computers. I've done a lot worse.
Can you grab the video from you?
Sure.
But does anyone have any questions? Are they confused? Does this help enlighten you?
No.
No? Okay. Yes, sir.
I brought my membership application in the chat. Can I hand it to somebody
Everyone's seen the Get a Mac commercial.
You still have your router on your apartment. I think it's still on the headlight.
So we have... The real one and the play one.
This is Japanese.
We got the sound pad right up there back to your little wireless router.
Apple has made the Japanese commercials.
Oh, yeah, indeed.
He's dead.
We're all deaf now.
Turn on the automatic translator.
Yeah. Sorry, even though Huntsville did change its name to Star Trek Alabama for a week, I don't have one of those. Okay.
I've got some other ones here.
David, that's been probably you've been talking Japanese all morning.
Well, I think I'm turning Japanese. I think I'm turning Japanese. I really think so.
Okay, this is with an English accent.
UK version, yes.
Hello, I'm a Mac, and I'm a PC. We have a lot in common these days. We got over in Microsoft Office. We share files. It's great. We just get along. Yes, I had to restart. You didn't know how it is. Not really. Oh, what? Macs don't have to. We lost them. I'm just going to get back to you. I'm a PC.
Oh, Lord.
Do you have the new Vista one?
Ah, yes, I do. Okay.
I'd love that one.
Talking about security.
Yeah.
Hello, Mac. Mac has issued a salutation, cancel or allow. Allow, not a piece. You're returning Mac salutation, cancel or allow. Allow.
Right.
Mac is asking a question, cancel or allow.
Allow.
Pretty distant, my new operating. He sees a lot of security problems. So he asks you to authorize pretty much anything. You're pointing out Vista's flaws, cancel or allow. Allow. I could turn him off, and he wouldn't give me any warnings at all. Defeat. You are coming to a sad realization. You can't go or allow. Allow.
Let's see if... I really like this one. Oh, the security.
Hello, Mac. Hello, my name is Mac. What's your name? Recently, there are a lot of viruses and spyware that have come out. I've installed some software. Oh! Hello, Mac. Mac. You don't need to be worried.
Apparently, he's trying to translate.
I don't want to do that.
Hello, I'm a man.
I am no one.
What are you talking about?
Shh. Listen to me, my friend. It is not safe for any of us right now. There's a lot of spyware out there. Sneaks into your system, follows you wherever you go.
Yeah, listen.
Take this. It'll keep you safe.
I run Mac OS X, so I don't need to worry about your spyware or viruses. You know what?
But you're going to have backup anyway. Did you hear that? There's nothing here! Just a couple of us Macs having fun!
And then the last one.
Hello, I'm Mac, and I'm a PC. How are you doing for a check? Well, I'm upgrading to Vista today, which is great, but I get a little nervous when I mess around with the inside.
Well, what do you mean? Is it just straightforward?
Not really. Like a lot of PCs, I have to update my graphics card, my memory. I want a premium package and faster processors, major surgery.
I'm sorry about that.
Listen, Matt, don't come back. I want you to have my first one.
Oh, come on. PC, you're not here. Ah, you can get first rolls.
But only the UK and Japan right now have their own style of get a Mac commercials.
Hello, Mac. Konnichiwa, Pasokon desu. Oh, iPod. Nani kiite? Yuromi. Ii desu yo ne, iPod. iTunes wa sukai desu shi. Podcast wa tanasemi masu.
Basically, he's talking about listening to music and podcasts. And now how great the Mac is because it comes with iLife. How Windows comes with great applications like, I think it was Solitaire and then Calculator is his second one. There's an actual better translation online of what they are with subtitles. So that's the only reason why I know that I don't speak Japanese. So, there we go. Actually, Apple's website. If there is a little link down at the bottom.
What's the difference as far?
Oh, my icon?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess the actors that they're using must be from their area.
Yeah.
They're not connected to
the area. Oh, yeah. It should be.
Should be.
Interesting.
How do you screw it up?
Wow. Actually, Marius set it up.
Yeah.
Oh, good to go. Nope, that didn't. Oh, well. If you go to Apple's website, it's at the very bottom. You can change the country. If you go to UK, it'll pull up the UK version of the website. If you go to Japan, it'll pull up theirs. Or you can go to youtube.com. It's basically an online social video site. And if you type in get a Mac space JPN for Japan, there are subtitled versions of it up there. So
it's working for me.
You're special.
I guess my computer has been blessed.
Why do you use Safari symbol given the monitor?
I'm special.
Well, now, David, let's have the truth.
Well, at least that's what the teachers told me. No, I changed it.
Oh, okay.
I got tired of seeing the regular old Safari symbol, so. And my address book is different. And
iTunes is different.
Yeah, slightly.
iCal seems to be normal.
Yeah.
But we all know that there is.
I am different. It's about time someone noticed. I appreciate that. Anyway, for those of you who would like to come to lunch, you are more than welcome to. I have no idea where we're going. If someone has a recommendation, please do so. Otherwise, thank you for coming out. Hang around. Come to lunch.